and then said, you know what I'd really like to see is a crime-fighting nun.
Alice Luisi, you used to be a nun. Now you're writing mysteries about a former nun. Is there a connection?
Only in that she used to be a former nun, too. I've never solved a mystery. I've never tried to be a private detective. I type forms for a living. I used to act.
Obviously, you have this in your background. But what made you decide to use a former nun as a base for a mystery series?
I was challenged by, at the time, a very famous agent. I sent him my first book, which was a religious horror, and he turned it down very politely and then said, you know what I'd really like to see is a crime-fighting nun. And several months later, I had my first book, Force of Habit, because I never thought of it before, but I thought I could take what I knew, which was in the convent, out of the convent, reassimilating, trying to learn how to interact with people and turn that into crime. So, and I read mysteries a lot.
The only nun I can think of who's involved in mysteries is back in Ireland in something like the 800s. That's a little different.
It's a lot different. I've read a couple of those books. No, this is very modern, this is what's happening now. They eat pizza, they go to regular jobs, they have to commute on the bus.
First books are notoriously autobiographical, and obviously your first book was about someone leaving a convent and trying to establish a life. But the second book, which is traditionally the toughest to write, you go back to the convent.
It was somewhat of a request. My publishers wanted to know more about Julia, my main character's background, and I could say almost everyone loves to know about the convent. People are curious. It's different. It's set apart. It's mysterious. So I thought, what more misery could I inflict on poor Julia than making her go back to the place she had wanted to escape from? So the poor thing got sent back.
Why this particular plot?
Something bad had to happen. She couldn't just go back for a vacation. That would be the vacation from hell. But something, and because the convent is such a change of everything, you must learn how to act differently. You are stuck with a certain bunch of people, and you must get along because that's the life you've chosen. You've chosen to be a nun. Therefore, these people are who I'm going to live with if I want to live out this vocation, except something really bad happens, and it's not just I put too much starch in the old nun's veils or I whistled while coming down the stairs when everybody was supposed to be quiet. So I had something really awful happen to these poor, sweet little novices.
You're sent back into this mother house, and you run into a cross-section of old nuns, some of whom were involved in the underground during World War II making bombs, and a young novice who has a drug problem. I mean, are all of these various groups and individuals essential to what you're trying to do?
Absolutely. Nuns are not little cookie-cutter happies, Sally Field or Julie Andrews, any Hollywood stereotype. Nuns come from all backgrounds, all walks of life, and they all come with issues, don't we all? So we have the angry nuns and the resigned nuns and the happy nuns and the nuns who are still trying to shake their problems from their previous experiences.
One of the things you tangentially refer to a couple of times in this book is this investigative team that the Vatican has been sending around convents and nuns in the U.S. to probe something. It's apparently never been clear. And I know a lot of nuns here are very upset about this whole thing.
I read it in the paper. I had no idea. The current Pope and his team are very conservative. And there is such a thing as they're going around to randomly picked convents to make sure everybody's towing the line. And so it's not a happy moment. So I thought, what else to do? A convent that's really doing bad things, they're the next ones on the list to be investigated. Oh, dear.
Is it the convent that's doing the bad thing or the nun who is in charge of this merged convent and I guess he's the chaplain to the mother house?
Yes. Well, they are, and they're involving the young nuns. So if such a thing happened if Julia hadn't have come in and solved the mystery and the Vatican team had come in, they would have figured out what was going on and everything would have come crashing down. At the end of the book, when everything comes crashing down, I indicate that all the nuns that were there for this big celebration scattered to the four winds, and the reader could interpret, yeah, that convent's going to crash and burn, or they'll somehow survive, which could be totally what happened in real life if such an investigation occurred.
One of the things that's occurring in this mother house in the course of your book is a series of, I can't tell from the book whether they are different orders of nuns coming together or different branches of the same order of nuns coming together and sort of a merger. Does this really happen?
It really does. It happened, maybe a decade ago. The three Franciscan convents, all the same, not, you know, St. Joseph convents or Carmelite convents, three Franciscan convents that used to have many, many nuns. So many had left over the years that basically they couldn't pay the rent. So they decided to merge and bring all the nuns that were still left under one big umbrella. And in my book, the convent Julia goes back to is the hub and the umbrella. So this is the big meeting high. We're all one big happy family now, when nobody really is one big happy family.
But it gives you a location, an assortment of issues, and an event to work with for your book.
Absolutely. Since Julia is going back undercover, people would have known she left a year and a half before this book opens. People would remember her somewhat. So, and because there is the feast day that's going on is St. Francis Day, which is the day he died. And it's a huge celebration in Franciscan communities, like, you know, big old fancy mass, big party. Everybody has a good old time. It's a big celebration. So since everybody's coming back here, there will be a ton of new faces. She could slip back in undercover and most people would not know her. So she wouldn't have to lie too much about why she was there, which drives her crazy. She hates to lie.
The nun who's running the place and the chaplain have a drug ring. I would think that 25 years ago or whenever you left the convent, the idea of a bad nun or a bad priest was just beyond the fictional pale, but you don't seem to have any qualms here. Have times changed that much?
Times have changed. The worst thing I ever heard of a priest back in my day was that they drank too much or went out and played poker with some of the deacons from the parish. But now I could read newspaper headlines and I would have a dozen books where Julia could investigate a priest doing something bad and no one would bat an eye. It's unfortunate.
Did you talk to many Catholics after the first book came out who had actually read the book or had they just heard rumors about what was in the book?
Some, yes, and I got a lot of nun reminiscences. Oh, I remember Sister Mary Margaret. She was miserable. Or I remember Sister Mary Joseph, and she loved us, and she was always singing. I got more, rather than Catholic reminiscences, I found that the book leads people to talk about the nuns who taught them, especially local. There's Mount St. Mary, I think, whatever local Catholic schools there were that had nuns, and people seem to have good memories. Either they're glossing it over, because I had some good nuns, but boy, I had a couple who just shouldn't have been teaching small children. But it's, which is the case with any kind of teacher. But I don't get Catholic reminiscences so much as I do get nuns. Everybody set the nuns apart. Everybody put the nuns up on that pedestal.
When you were a nun, it was a while ago, were the public attitudes about nuns and convents different than they are today?
I think so. I haven't been a Catholic for many years either, and I've been out of that loop. But yes, I wore the habit, the modified habit, which is the long black dress and the modified veil, and everybody looks ugly in that. And yet, when I was going to school or teaching kids, total strangers would come up and confide in me or ask me for advice, because nuns are perceived as the ones who help and the ones you can trust. I think that's still the case with nuns. It is unfortunate that that's not the case with some priests, because I know most priests I know are wonderful men who are doing great work, but they are getting smeared with the scandal of the few.
In your first book, your character leaves the convent, winds up as a kind of an apprentice private investigator. In this book, she's a little more advanced, but she's also in a tentative start of a relationship with her boss, and she goes back to the convent. Is this complicated in building your structure?
complicated is good. No one wants a linear, oh, look, she dated her boss. Oh, look, she's going to marry her boss. Yawn. Poor, stuffy, confused Juliet has a lot of issues. And poor Frank, a good cradle Catholic, when he sees Julia in the habit again, it just takes him back to his school days, and any relationship they had, it crashes and burns, and they have to rebuild it. It's complicated is good because life is complicated, and I want to make these characters real like you could see them in a grocery store.
You have a third book in the late stages of being prepared. How do you build on the existing characters you have as you progress along a series?
The third book was easier to write than the second, which was easier to write than the first because I got to know the characters better. I was creating the characters in the first and learning who they are and what their preferences were, what kind of music they like, what kind of food they like to eat. And now it's more like I'm meeting them for coffee and we're having a chat. What's happening in your life? The characters are that real to me. This makes people look at writers very weird. My husband just sighs and accepts it.
How much of a computer file do you have on the lives of your characters?
Pages. Pages and pages of the characters and of their families and of their preferences. And what I have diagrams of what their homes and offices look like, where the chairs are, where things are, what the neighborhood looks like. Because that's how they become completely real to me. If they're not real to me, I can't make real characters on a page.
Sort of like science fiction books where they include a map of this planet where all the events are taking place on, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I have a map in my head of the world these characters live in. Even though, like, book two takes place in a completely fictional place in Pittsburgh, but in my head, it is completely real with real streets and real smells and real businesses and real everything. If that's my world building for this series.
Obviously, these books are not set in the Buffalo area. Does that make it simpler that it's not here?
Yes and no. This way, I like a fictional town, which I have created a fictional town that I plopped into basically empty space in that area of Pennsylvania. So I don't have to worry about, did I put a street full of houses where there's really warehouses and small businesses? I can create my own world. I'm a god.
Can you create your own order of nuns?
Oh, I could, but that would be difficult. Then I'd be getting into fantasy land. There are so many orders of nuns that I could pick anyone. I picked Franciscans because I was one and I know how they think and how the order is structured.
Do you still understand them, considering the number of years you've been out of the convent?
Yes and no. I still have friends who are nuns, and we get together, but things have relaxed a bit now. So I understand more where they're coming from, and they understand more where I'm coming from, because the lines are blurred a bit.
Does it make a difference that there are so many fewer nuns? And just the other day, another parochial school here in Buffalo was closing. That there's a different public perception because you don't see nuns all over the place?
It's true. I think one of the reasons I was always in trouble in the convent is because back in the early 80s, which is when I was a nun, I was already lobbying for let's let nuns and priests marry, let's let women become priests, because even then you could see things starting to really have problems, people leaving left and right. I think that if those changes happened, then the schools wouldn't be closing so much. And whether a nun was married or not or whatever, there would still be that perception of nuns. The public would still see it. The public would still want it. That's a theory, though.
Thank you, Alice Luisi.
Thank you.